This NBA season, make every three-pointer, alley-oop, and buzzer-beater even more exciting with FanDuel. You can bet on everything from first baskets and number of dunks to which player will drain the most threes. Or stack your bets with the same-game parlay for a shot to win even bigger. It's quick, easy, and you'll get your winnings fast. So download the app today and see why we're North America's number one sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel. 19 plus and physically located in Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-866-531-2600 or visit connectsontario.ca.
Welcome to the Rapcast. My name is Zarar. I'm joined today by Andrew Demlin and Manny Rao. Hey, guys.
Hey, Zarar. Hey,
let's jump right into it. Biden has pulled out of Afghanistan, leaving behind a bigger mess than Brian Colangelo.
Oh, man. I'm not qualified to speak on this. I'm not at all qualified to speak on
this. I was ready for this. Let's go.
Let's all right. Zarar, you're hot. Let's stick to topics maybe that we can comment on. You know, the rain clouds of geopolitics hang over us.
Yeah.
I guess this is a Raptors podcast, and it is summertime. This is historically the deadest time of the year for the site. Late August, September, the first part of September is just absolute dead. So, but that's not going to stop us from talking Raptors. And I guess the first topic on hand is the discrepancy between what Vegas thinks the Raptors are going to do and what a lot of Raptor fans think the Raptors are going to achieve this year. Vegas has them at 35 wins, and Vegas knows whatever Vegas knows. Let's just say 35 wins is their prediction based on the Raptors offseason and their history, I guess. And there are some fans who are quite optimistic and quite fervent in their belief that the Raptors are a 50-55 win team. Let me start with Andrew. Andrew, where do you lie on that spectrum? And what is causing this heavy variance across across the upcoming season?
I think the Vegas line is based on the general perception that Toronto teams won't do well from Americans. So it takes that sort of general betting population into account. I think they're a 500 team, a fun 500 team. I don't even think about wins and losses this year. I just think, will the team be fun? Will they have fun playing together in another, like you said in your article today, in another bridge year? So Raptors fans are always going to be defensive and want a higher win total. But based on last year, like what win total would you expect? 50 wins? I mean, that sounds outlandish. I don't know the path to 50 wins for this team.
Yeah, it's like on election, not to go back to politics, but you know, on election night, they go, oh, this candidate has a path to 270, right? Or a path to whatever it is. I don't see a path to 50 wins. Manny, where do you stand on that spectrum?
So I think they're going to go 74-8. I think they're going to conjure up the best record ever in league history. No, but seriously, guys, I think that it's a little, I agree with you guys. It's a little crazy to think that, you know, 50 wins may not be realistic. I don't know if a 500 record even is realistic. I think I'm with Andrew on this. You know, I want to see how these parts work together. I want to see if they're going to be fun. I mean, look, this is like the biggest roster turnover we've had in years. You know, over the years, obviously, we've gotten pieces. But I think in terms of just how they're going to play together, like you've got the number four pick and he's a big piece of the puzzle now. And I think like just being patient with them, just, you know, it, like just have fun watching this team blossom and watching them grow. Look how much fun we've had watching OG grow. You know, Pascal, Fred is going to be the undisputed leader of the team now. I think it's without question that they're going to, you know, maybe 38 to 44 wins. That's the number I'm looking at. But then again, I don't have too many expectations.
It could be like a Knicks thing from last year. Really a very pleasant surprise, well-coached team, and Julius Randle becomes this legit number one option or close to it. When we don't know if Pascal is going to be that. We don't know if OG is going to make that next leap. It's like, what do you take from last season? It was weird. It went bad when everyone got COVID. But what was the best outcome of last year? And that's kind of the top guys you're bringing back this year. So how many wins does the continuity add on the top end talent? And how much do you have to bring along the young guys the new pieces that they're trying to develop, like Masai Ujiri says. So like you said, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty in there, but that ceiling to me seems around 500.
Yeah, and what is the path to 50
wins? Yeah,
let's talk that through a little bit. Like, what needs to happen? Because those fans aren't stupid. I mean, they obviously have something in their mind that they're envisioning happening, which will lead to a 50-32 season or 18 games over 500. What do you think that is, Andrew?
As a tangible idea, I think home court advantage is going to mean something. That will bring extra wins than playing in Tampa. So I think that hype from the crowd, that excitement from this young core, you know, it gives young guys confidence to play at home. So there's a couple extra wins per se. OG Anunoby, does he make that leap? I also think Malachi Flynn, who I watched a lot in the G League last year and who really impressed Raptors fans towards the end of the season, this guy has all the talent and all the confidence, I think, to just show up this season feeling like he's ready under that pedigree of Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet to lead a competent second unit, which couldn't score the ball at all last year. So there's two guys that you need to see step up even further in order to make that path. And also, I'm just looking at the standings right now, that teams that made the playoffs last year. Like, there's the Wizards, there's the Pacers, there's the Hornets, and there's the Knicks that are kind of all questions. You don't know if they're going to ascend or possibly fall off a little bit. So maybe they don't have optimal seasons as a path as well.
Now, I agree with that too. And I would say home court is a big part of it because, you know, after not playing in Toronto the entire season, playing like what, 72, pretty much 72 road games, it is a big deal. And it's like a huge disadvantage for any team, but especially I think Toronto being the only Canadian team. On top of that, I think a lot of people are locked in with the idea of how good this team can be and the potential of how good this team could be. You got guys like I said, like Scotty, you got Delano Banton, you got Precious, and a guy who's like really like grinding it out and proving that he's gonna work for his spot, Ish Wainwright. I think you've got like who may not be well known, but I think the idea of this team and the potential down the road is kind of where people are thinking, well, you know, this might happen sooner than later because let's face it, Masai Ujiri and Bobby Webster have done an amazing job rounding this team out over the years. And, you know, even saying that doesn't give them enough credit. But yeah, you look at the East and, you know, the East really is very top heavy with Brooklyn, Milwaukee. I'm not convinced Miami is going to be one of the top three teams yet, but I would agree. Like, there is a lot of question marks surrounding the, you know, 3-8 or 4-8 seeds in the East because you just don't know. You know, you don't know what you're going to get.
We should mention the Bulls are probably going to jump up.
Bulls are going to jump up. Probably going to be top four, I would say. Yeah.
You know, you guys both in your answers to how the Raptors might get the 50 wins kind of left out their main guy, which is Pascal Siakam. And I think he needs to make a leap forward this year. I know he's injured with the shoulder, but he's going to be back hopefully by the season starts. I think when you looked at last year, the Raptors had some trouble closing games. There were a lot of question marks with his decision-making at the helm with the game on the line. I thought overall his ball handling improved last season. I thought after Kyle, you could make a case that he was the Raptors' second-best playmaker. Even ahead of Fred at times, because he brought the ball up the court, had a pretty low turnover rate bringing the ball up the court, created well enough. I think he finally learned this year that when he drives into the middle, if you looked at his passing angles out of that initial double team, it was always to where his face was facing. It was to the corner or where he was looking. Last year, I thought he made a leap where he was starting to pass the other way. So you couldn't just close off one end and kind of neutralize him. He had a higher dimensionality to his passing game. I think that needs to continue. And his three-point shooting. Did you guys think, I'll start with Andrew, that his three-point shooting last year was just an off year or does he have a three-point shot that can reach 38-39% consistently? Because I think that's one of the things that needs to happen for the Raptors to achieve some of those ambitious targets that some people are setting for them.
Yeah, he was under 30% from three last year, and that's because he was more of a target defensively with Lowry out all the time, and obviously, you know, well, Kawhi for the last two seasons, I should say. But Yeah, the three-point shot's got to become reliable. Can you make an open drive and kick, catch and shoot three? Nothing off the dribble. I don't think that's ever going to happen for him. Like, his shot was totally broken coming out of college, and he has worked on it tirelessly to get it to an acceptable point. But he kind of, in elevating that three-point volume, he kind of took out his mid-range shot that I think is so reliable as well. So I hope to see a steady diet of that too. But the assist point you make is such a great point, because so often you'd find him getting caught in the air perhaps and just throwing kind of a desperate pass to keep the possession going. He had a career high 4.5 assists last year, and he had a 2-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. So you hope to see that growth. And it's telling that we both left out Pascal, because I think in me and Manny's minds, perhaps we had just in our just assumed way that he had reached that. That he's we've reached the ceiling of Pascal, which is an unbelievable ceiling that he's coming out of nowhere. Obviously, just picked up the game as a teenager, but can he make another step when he's even more of a focal point of the defense? We'll see. Maybe in a better environment. Hopefully, he's no longer this malcontent at certain parts of the season. Hopefully, you know, it's hard to win and try to build again after going to championship heights. Will he accept that and be like, yeah, I'm cool with this middling team that's fun and still competitive? That attitude, I don't know if it's a question mark. I don't have sources on this, but time will tell about that, because he had some moments last year where there was some serious friction between him and the coaches in the front office.
Yeah, I would say that too. I mean, I would think that in terms of his contract, like, you got to look at, I think he signed a 4-year, $130 million deal, you know, entering the 2019-2020 season. So I think I still feel like there is a level that he can get to, but he has to prove it. You know, I think him being more of a focal point for opposing teams when they're defending the Raptors, I think that's going to be a huge, huge thing, and seeing whether or not he can handle that pressure again with, you know, hopefully a full roster ready to go. But it's good to know that, you know, the offensive potential of this team is actually like, it's in my opinion, it's very, very high. Especially when you have, you know, a guy like Kem Birch, who really wasn't able to do the things in Orlando that we're now seeing, or that we saw last season with the Raptors. A guy like Gary Trent, who, you know, now has all the confidence in the world, you know, after signing a 3-year, $54 million deal. And Malachi Flynn, like, I really think his improvement is going to determine, it's going to be a huge factor in determining how far the Raptors will go this season. Because, you know, he showed that coming out of college, he's not just a defensive guard. He can also do things on offense. And it's a great thing for, you know, his rookie year, having been mentored by Kyle Lowry and Fred VanVleet, two guys that, you know, work really hard in their craft. And, you know, they're just no BS guys. So I think that, you know, Pascal and the team, obviously, like, their offensive potential is really high. But in terms of the three-point shooting, like, the Raptors are still the fourth team in three-pointers attempted last season. I think as long as Pascal, you know, continues this role that, you know, he's been on in terms of his development over the years, I think if he can really take his three-point shooting up a notch, I don't see why this team can't be, you know, within the playoff conversation.
And Zora, I wanted to ask you about this, actually. We're talking about offense, 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 but the defensive rebounding last year was an utter debacle with Aaron Baines. You lose him, but there's so little size in the middle. How do you think the team fares this year on the interior, on the defensive end, which is what really killed them in so many close games?
You know, there's a general idea that somehow we have solved that problem by re-signing Kem Birch, when Kem Birch is a post buyout, small sample size. He played well in those 20 games, but I think part of the reason Raptors fans are big fans of Kem Birch is what came before him. The contrast is so stark between what was there before him and when he came that we're enamored with the guy. I think that the center position is still a question mark, not just on the glass. I think on the glass, we'll see improvement just because Kem is more aggressive. He'll be a more physical presence there and collect more rebounds. But I think overall defensively, because the Raptors are very aggressive on their help defense, on their rotations, and their strategy seems to be to funnel people into the paint. And I think Birch moves well enough where he can sort of seal off that initial drive and make the offense do something else instead of just walk their way to the rim. So I think you'll see incremental improvement there. I'm just not sure him plus an unproven Precious Achiuwa is going to clog that massive hole that we saw last season. I'm hoping they do. And I think if they had upped their center game a little bit higher and Kem Birch was the first backup instead of the starter, I think my win projection might be +5, +6 higher just based on that.
Yeah, and excuse me, like the center position is not just defunct. It is not a position that doesn't matter anymore. Like, you play against Joel Embiid, you can't grab a rebound. He is given 30 and 15 every single time you face him. Even with the Nets and Jared Allen was traded, I'm thinking of Jared Allen and DeAndre Jordan, who's not that great. But even then, the rebounding is still an issue. That presence that he has in the paint is still an issue. There's still something to get through on the interior of any NBA defense.
It's also a big part on the other side, I feel, on the offensive side, because the Raptors run a hell of a lot of high screen and rolls. And if your screen man isn't an offensive threat, well, that entire play just loses 50% of its effectiveness because you're not even worrying about the ball. That's one of the things that Kem Birch did last year, was that he added almost like a surge, poor man, Serge Ibaka-ish presence there, where he could finish that 8-footer, that 9-footer with relative ease. And I really hope that that part of his game continues.
Yeah, I would say that in terms of Kem Birch being like the number one option at center, it's definitely an upgrade over Baines. But in terms of, you know, him solving the issue entirely, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Toronto plays, because I mean, you know, Mazai and Bobby have talked about, and even Nick Nurse too, have talked about positionless basketball. So I'm wondering what other names you're going to see there. I know that I think OG played a little bit last year. I think Pascal obviously played a little bit last year, but for the most part, it's still a pretty big void in the middle.
Positionless basketball is such a, I hate that term. Honestly,
I hate it.
The positions still exist. You might not want to call them certain things.
Yeah.
People might be more versatile, but if you don't have a center, it matters. If you don't have a point guard, it matters. You can't just hand the ball to a 6'8 guy all the time unless you're LeBron. Positions are things, and you can just categorize them any way you want, but the term positionless basketball, which coaches invoke all the time, I think is kind of bunk.
Gives them a sort of like a free pass to throw in whatever the hell lineup you want out there.
it'll be interesting for sure, because I think, you know, in terms of a guy like PJ Tucker, like I think, you know, we've likened him to Ish Wainwright, but I mean that's so early to tell, and I think it's, you know, a guy that's like, you know, 6'6" that can really out muscle opposing big men, like that's going to be interesting to see. I mean I do want to see that happen, and I want to see what is going to happen with this lineup. I'm not a huge advocate for positionless basketball, but I think it's something that's intriguing for sure.
You don't want to put yourself in a box either way. It's exactly. Like, you don't want to have 1 through 5 or whatever. Yeah. You want to be able to be flexible, but the idea to me is,
can we also celebrate the return of the mid-range game a little? I feel that's coming back after a couple of years off. I think we've seen more than just like blind three-point shooting. I think people have tried that, gotten a little sick of it, and people are like, oh, nobody's defending the mid-range anymore. Maybe we should start taking it a little bit more.
And Pascal has that ability. That is where he started to ascend, was in the mid-range, mid-post area. I'm not sure why that can't continue. You know, Van Vliet can create somewhat for him. OG can create too. Hopefully his passing ability increases as well. But the mid-range is something, and we know in the playoffs, there's only the mid-range that's available, right? So that's going to be key.
And I'll say one thing about the Pascal is that his three-point shot, he just got to stop taking pull-up threes. I think he should just focus. His volume kind of went up in pull-up threes when it really should mostly 80-90% of his threes really should be spot-up, right? Because if you're trying to shoot pull-up threes when your form isn't already that great and you're already struggling, that possibly can't be a good thing. And I interviewed Dave Hopla, the legendary shooting coach, one day, and he kind of mentioned that to me. He's like, if you're going to improve your game, start with the just set shot. Once that's done, then you move on to a higher variety.
Yeah, I agree with that. Go ahead, Manny.
I was going to say that it's funny that the mid-range is kind of making a comeback because, like, you know who would be perfect for that is DeMar DeRozan, hilariously. So, I mean, it's like, it's just insane how, like, these things are completely ignored for a couple, or at least that aspect of the game was kind of, like, ignored for a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're seeing it more and more. I think Fred also himself developed sort of a mid-range near the end of the season, or was showing signs of it too. But, like, that's the good thing about having shooters is that, you know, the three-pointer is definitely emphasized in the league today. But, you know, in terms of, like, having a mid-range game and being able to shoot from the mid-range, it's like there's so many things you can do just from that option, especially from the high post. If you're able to just develop like that, it's insane. It unlocks a team's entire offense.
And I asked the Raptors 905 head coach about what his sort of ideal basketball aesthetic was. Is it like the old time centers with the paint touches, and or is it the three ball? He's like, I emphasize paint touches so much because I find it humiliating when someone is scoring in my paint over and over and over again. So yes, I understand the 3-point shot is important, but his offense last year in the bubble was the number one offense, and they had tons of post-ups, a little bit of mid-range as well. So there is a way to get your offensive rating up while still shooting more twos than average these days.
It just depends on sometimes you just get lucky and you play in the right era, right? I feel Chris Bosh wasted the first 6 years of Chris Bosh's career were like, guy doesn't go into the paint. Too many jumpers. When in reality, he should have done the opposite. He should have gone back to the 3-point line. And he did that when he went to Miami. And to some degree, like JV kind of ended up playing in the quote unquote wrong era where he was, the league was going one way. And William Liu, when he was with Rappers Republic, used to always say, JV's a relic of the past. And J.R. Smith is a guy who played, again, in the wrong era. He was a guy who used to bomb from three all the time, but got criticized for it. But if he played in today's NBA, he's an ideal player.
I think it just continues to evolve. The defenses continue to evolve and adjust, and hopefully it doesn't stay static. There was one rule change. You know, the writer Kirk Goldsberry mentioned in his book. He said there should be a three-second count if you're standing in the corner waiting to shoot a three, which I think would, just on its face, sounds so interesting. So hopefully, you know, the game continues towards the mid-range. You don't have to make a rule change in order to get guys off the three-point line. But there's ways also to sort of change the game up and make it more dynamic and have not every team play the same way.
Yeah, I think that's part of also just expanding the offense overall. Because, I mean, at the end of the day, if teams are going to continually shoot three-pointers, I mean, it's going to be – you're going to have, you know, five out, or you're going to have four out. It's not going to be easy to game plan for that, but it's going to be, you know, a routine kind of thing. And I think in terms of changing up the lineups and changing up, you know, your personnel, it's going to be so interesting to see what direction this team heads. Cause yeah, I'm intrigued by the personnel that they've acquired. It's crazy. But
did they end up making that rule change where you shoot one and ones now instead of twos, or what, wasn't there something going on that front?
Well, in the G League,
they didn't promote that rule change to the NBA yet.
The one free throw for everything was the best rule ever. Get fouled shooting a two, one free throw for a two. Fouled shooting a three, one free throw for a three.
You follow the G League? Do you see that ever happening in the NBA where we get one and ones?
Never, for a couple of reasons. One, because the ads. There's so many ads during free throws. And the players didn't like that they lost out on like 30 seconds of rest because the free throws were abbreviated. But for a fan, it's just the best.
Okay. Okay, yeah, so let's move on to a couple other guys that we definitely said we would talk about pre-podcast. Let's start with Ish, and then we'll go to OG. So, Andrew, you interviewed Wainwright's college coach, assistant coach, or associate coach. I didn't know that was a thing, but
neither did I. But yeah, that's okay. Right.
There he is. Right. I guess it's a dotted line to the head coach rather than a solid line in the org chart. I mean, maybe that's the
that what it is? Exactly. Okay. Right. I think so. Yeah.
So what impressions did you walk away with after that interview with him?
Yeah, the guy Jerome Tang, such a sweet guy. He said that among every Baylor player he's coached, 18 years plus he's been there, he's among the top three leaders that he had, which is pretty incredible considering the NBA talent that's there. But he says that he has the gift of vision, always sees the extra pass, and defensively he would always trust in him making the final stop. And there are highlights of him making the final stop. And he's really aggressive too. He doesn't lay back. He's like blocked shots to end games as well. Just super intelligent. And he had one really funny story. He said, my signature-ish Wainwright play is when, you know the player Damian Jones, he played for the Suns and he played for the Warriors. He said he got switched in a mismatch on the first play of the game and he tried to post him up in the lane. Backs him down, and he doesn't move, and he slaps the ball away. And it was like the parallel Kyle Lowry story where you can't post up Kyle Lowry. It's just, it was such a thing that Raptors fans would be endeared to. But from a basketball perspective, defensively and passing-wise, it sounds like you can really trust him. And like so many 3-and-D prospects, it's like, will that three-point shot come along? Who knows? He made 4 threes in a summer league game this scored 20 points, which led to that emotional press conference afterwards that won Raptors fans' hearts. So will that three-point shot develop enough? And, you know, it's going to be a training camp where he's got to make the team. We'll see. But defensively, I think he's going to be someone you can rely on.
So why hasn't he made it to the league for the first couple of years? Like, what kept him out of the league?
Well, he tried football after 4 years. I'm sure he wasn't going to get drafted. He was signed by the Bills, actually, but an injury prevented him from making the team. And then I guess by that point, his NBA prospects had kind of sunk. So he went overseas. He played in, I think, the top French league for a couple of seasons and was really successful. And another thing that Coach Tang said to me was that teams like the Raptors are sort of, in terms of signing role players, they're happier to probably pick up a seasoned guy who's played overseas versus a college prospect that might have an element of entitlement to him when you're playing that 13th, 14th man role. So that's another thing that really sort of entices you and makes you root for the guy when he comes into training camp.
College privilege.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, these guys are coddled from the second they're in AAU, right? So you get to humbled pretty quickly when you're playing overseas and kind of in obscurity. So that attitude is going to be impressive. And he also, like, he throws his body everywhere, jumps out of bounds. Raptors fans will, again, love this guy if he gets there.
Yeah, I think me and Andrew, I mean, we haven't talked about Ish, but we've kind of talked about Ish in passing. But, I mean, honestly, his game is just so – it's hard not to fall in love with his game because he throws himself, you know, all around the court. And, you know, he doesn't have that entitlement. And it's a guy like him that I think that the Raptors, you know, try and go for, obviously, as we alluded to. But in terms of like his hustle, his grind, like, you know, you think about Memphis's grit and grind, you know, with those guys, Tony Allen, Marc Gasol, and those guys. And it's just like, it's refreshing to see, and it's always nice. And it's the kind of stuff that makes him a fan, that'll probably make him a fan favorite. Fingers crossed he does make the opening night roster, because, you know, after that interview, I think that was just the icing on the cake, you know, where he's talking about his daughter. And I think it's a guy like him. He works hard. His Afro basket stats too, you know, he's second leading scorer, I think, with 18.8 points in the Afro basket 2021 qualifiers. So I really like, I mean, there's potential there for sure. He's not, you know, by no means is this the basketball player that he's going to, you know, retire being. But, I mean, we'll see. It's going to be interesting, definitely. And I'm very intrigued by him.
That we've spent this much time talking about Ish Wainwright before OG Anunoby, it makes me so happy. So I just want to put that out there.
Let me round off the Ish Wainwright thing. I mean, let's talk about his fit with the team, what gap he addresses on the team. But first, I want to tell you, because he is from Kansas City, Missouri, where I used to live for a couple of years. And he went to Raytown High School, which is a prep school, very ranked, very high academically in the United States. So he went there, and I used to go to Archbishop O'Hara High School. And O'Hara High School and Raytown were not rivals, but we played in the same league. And another team in the same kind of district was Pembroke High. And Pembroke High had Jamal Rush, Brandon Rush, and those guys go to it. So he comes from a place in Kansas City, Missouri, which has high basketball pedigree. not just from a basketball perspective, but also academically. So there's a lot of good things to about his upbringing, I should say, that the Raptors can benefit from. But let's switch to basketball for a second. 6'6" guard, physical. I cannot necessarily think of another player like him on the Raptors. Gary Trent Jr. maybe, but smaller, lighter, not as physical. OG probably is the closest comp to him in terms of physically from a guard slash forward spot. I think, do you think that alone sort of gives him an edge into making that opening night roster that Manny talked about?
The guy is a physical man-child. Like, he is wide. The shoulders are wide. He can guard anybody on the perimeter, and you can post anyone up on him, and he won't be moved. So defensively, as a 13th man, a guy you can trust to sort of keep the score around the same while the first unit is on the bench, that's something that can allow you to win games. And from a marginal 13th to 15th guy, that's got to be a positive thing that Nick Nurse looks upon as he evaluates everybody in training camp.
Look, all I'm saying is that if he's going to be like PJ Tucker or, you know, even a Lugenstorts, sorry, I don't know if I'm saying his name right. My bad.
Lu Dort.
If he's going to be like the mold of those two guys, who, by the way, you know, Nick Nurse loved Lu Dort when he was coaching Team Canada earlier this summer. How can you not, you know, insert a guy like that into the lineup? And, you know, I'm really intrigued to see like how he's going to defend. And I think he's going to defend, you know, the bigger guys, the centers. I don't know if he's going to be successful in doing it because, you know, it's his first, we don't even know if he's going to make the opening night roster, but you know, if he does, like, you know, he's going to have his hiccups. He's going to have his mistakes. I think, you know, to expect him to be a lockdown defender, it might be a little crazy, but
I think he's going to be a lockdown defender. We expect him to be the immovable object,
the
unstoppable force.
Yeah.
Kind of like that guy.
Definitely. I think for sure. But I think he has the potential to really, you know, and he has all the physical tools to lock down opposing centers and opposing big men.
He also has the potential to win our hearts, much like OG Anunoby. I pulled up his stats on the screen. I think we can all agree that, you know, if we have to hit that ambitious 58 win target that many are expecting the Raptors to hit, this guy basically has to up his game by like 35% across the board, I find. Just to set some context for you guys, I think heading into last season, one of the pieces of homework that OG had to do was become more than a 3-and-D player and you know, do more than just hit threes and the occasional drive, you know, where he used to cut from the baseline, maybe get scores that way, and transition into more of a scorer who can maybe do a pull-up. And I'll let you guys answer how well he did in that area. But next, so two questions. One, how well did he meet expectations last year based on the previous year's expectations? And what is the next logical jump for him this year? Who wants to go first?
Manny, this time you take it.
So I think that the one thing that, in watching the Raps play and seeing OG, you know, really becoming and emerging an offensive option, I think his first step has to be quicker. I think that's something that I would like to see for sure. Like right off the dribble, his first step has to be quicker. The other thing is that his ball security, just, you know, when he's going into the paint, I think, sometimes, you know, a lot of hands are able to get on the ball. And I think that his ball security is another thing that needs to improve if he's going to take that next step. In terms of his shot attempts, like, they're going to go up for sure. Everyone on the team is probably, like, I would say him, Fred, and Pascal, their shot attempts are going to go up. But what's going to be interesting is to see, you know, who is going to be relied on to be the number one option. Because in my mind, it's not a given that, you know, I think the ball could really be in OG's hands during crunch time. Like, I don't think that's a question. I think his two-pointers, though, like, they're definitely going to have to increase. He attempted only 6 during the season last year. And you know, he's so efficient.
What? So, sorry. What? He attempted what?
He only
attempted
six two-point
shots a game.
6 two-point shots a game last season.
per game.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Sorry.
So
like, he only took 6 2-point shots.
No. So he attempted in total 12 shots a game, but he's so efficient in what he does, and you know, I think taking like having that increased offensive responsibility is only going to, you know, it's only going to make him better. And you know, he's improved every year he's been in the league. So yeah, I think that those two things, along with what I said, his first step has to be like really quick. I think that needs to improve. Ball security, and I would say, the 2-pointers, like that. You know, on the note we were talking about the mid-range game, that has to go up for sure as well.
Yeah, I think he finally realized how strong he was last year. Like, I have a mismatch. I'm not far from the hoop. Like, let's get into the paint. Then trust my post game. He would talk multiple times in pressers. He actually became way more open last year, spoke for more than 10 words at a time, talking about developing his offensive game and trying to add different elements to it because he knows he's going to be relied upon more. But just looking pure numbers-wise, he averaged 3.5 more minutes, went from 10.6 points to 15.9 points, a career-high 40% from three on 6 attempts. So those numbers are sort of speak for themselves. Like, he can reliably shoot the three. I think that proves it. So that should open up things for him. I agree with Mann, that first step is a great point. But defensively, he's going to have just as much responsibility as ever. How much of a leap does he take? You know, he also missed 30 games last year. So it's so hard to take what you can from last year and try to extrapolate. It was such a strange season. Missed games, road games for every single game, right? So I don't know if it's going to be that linear ascent necessarily with everybody sort of, there's no Lowry anymore, right? That is going to cause, forget about the lack of talent, the lack of continuity as well. So it's hard to see how much higher it goes. Hopefully it stays steady or goes a little bit higher, but it in a bridge year, you hope that there's some improvement along the way for OG. And I do foresee that for him.
So I'll say that he has the point about the dribble is interesting because I always classify dribbles under the unused dribble, how good he is off the unused dribble in his hand and how good is he off the live dribble in his hand. Off the live dribble, he's been pretty okay. Like, he's got a good hezzy in his move when he's bringing the ball up the court. He has sort of made use of that to good effect last year. I think what he hasn't really done is make use of a unused dribble and use that to create for his teammates or get his own shot. So I think that's definitely homework for him this year. The point about the space is interesting because he is probably, and maybe this is wrong, but I don't know. I think he might be the Raptors' best post-up player.
Definitely. I mean, back to the basket?
Yes, back to the basket.
I think so, because he's stronger than Pascal. Pascal, yeah. I like it when he catches with his back to it, then he'll face up a guy. He's got way more options. But backing down, how many baskets can you even think of Siakam scoring when he just tries to back down a guy, drop step a guy versus OG?
I think that part of his game is something which is unique to him on this roster, and I think he's got to make more use of that. And I think this season is another season where he probably won't see a lot of double teams. He's still probably a year away from breaking through and having an offensive impact where defenses will be like, okay, maybe we got to help OG out more than we have been before. I think he'll see a relative lack of double teaming, which should give him the freedom to expand or experiment with his offense a little bit more. But talking pure numbers, he's at 16 points a game this year. I would like to see, and I don't see why, he needs to cross the 20-point threshold this year. I think that should be a goal for him from a scoring perspective. He's entering his fifth year. The Raptors do consider him a core piece of the future. They have expectations that he'll be a good offensive player, more than a 3-and-D. Maddie, do you think that's an unfair expectation, going up 4 points a game, 20-plus this year?
I don't see why not. I don't think that's an unfair expectation. I think thinking he's going to average 25 would be a stretch, but I think 20 points a game for OG is totally doable. He upped his scoring average from around 10 points in 2019 to 2020 to 16 points last year. So that's, you know, a 5 to 6 point increase season to season. I don't see why not. The only reason I see that not happening is if you know, he misses a lot of games, God forbid. But no, I do think he's going to average around that. I think my expectation, or at least what I think would be realistic for him, is around 18 to 20. That's definitely going to help the Raptors a lot. And I think his shot attempts definitely need to go up from three and from two. I'm going to add one thing real quick about his defense too, since we were on that topic. But his defensive versatility, at least according to bballindex.com, he actually had the highest positional versatility when guarding each position last year. So he guarded, I think he was guarding what, each position evenly, like around the same amount, like around 20%. He guarded each position around, 20%, whenever he was on the court. So it's insane that, you know, his potential is a lot higher than, you know, what it was on draft day. And I feel like it continues to go up every year, but back to, yeah, his points per game, I would say 18 to 20 is kind of where I'm thinking.
Zerar, that's your able to multitask, find OG and Anobi visuals while organizing the conversation in this podcast is just eternally impressive to me.
I'm doing this for years. I'm a vet.
Wiley.
I'm like Robert Parrish out here.
The chief, yes. That's definitely you.
All right. I mean, so, OG, man, I have very high expectations of him. I think the Raptors do too. I think better post-up scoring, better playmaking, better perimeter scoring, better defensively. I expect him to go up in every single category next year because he has to. And as long as he stays injury free, I would expect him to increase in all those categories. And somebody, a friend of mine asked me a question a while back, and this is like 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago. And he asked me, who has a higher ceiling, Pascal Siakam or OG Anunoby? And I was like, of course, Pascal.
Of course.
Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
Same question now. Doesn't sound that stupid.
No, not at all.
It doesn't sound stupid because you see the growth potential of OG. You see, and you don't necessarily see that with Pascal. Where it leads him, who knows? But no, it's not a stupid question anymore. I made the terrible, what's it called, freezing cold take. You remember the player on the Dallas Mavericks, Roddy Beaubois? He was like this untradeable prospect. And I, 2-3 years ago, I likened OG to Roddy Beaubois. Like, why does everyone think so highly of this guy? And look at my scouting acumen now. The growth is potential is definitely there. And I think you'll get your answer by the end of this season.
I think that in terms of his potential, like that isn't a dumb question now, obviously, but I think, you know, his potential, like it's crazy because it keeps, at least in my opinion, it keeps changing every year. His ceiling, it's almost like it keeps going up. And I'm not saying, you know, I don't foresee him as a top five player by any means in the future, but I'm just saying there's a Roddy Piper quote. It's, you know, whenever, just when you think you know the answer, I change the question. And it's like, it's unbelievable how OG keeps on improving. And, you know, the expectations for him year to year are just changing, and drastically too, I think.
Okay, so let me ask you another question, which may sound dumb right now, but may not be dumb 3 years from now. Who knows, right? I mean, so who has the higher ceiling, okay? May sound dumb right now, may not sound dumb in 3 years, okay? Who has the higher ceiling, OG Anunoby or Delano Banton?
Manny, I'll leave that to you. My Delano Banton scouting has been minimal at best, so you take that one.
We're talking right now, and I'm you know,
it's, I mean, I'm being facetious. I'm being facetious. Okay, so let's talk about Delano Banton. Okay, let's just, based on the 6 summer league games that we have seen of Delano Banton, clearly, what's going on here? Okay, there you go. Let's look at some Delano Banton highlights while we talk through him. He had a pretty damn good summer league. I think people were quite impressed with some of the zippy passes that he was able to make during the summer league. And immediately people were like, well, maybe, you know, point forward, the Raptors have a general problem with lack of ball handling. Here's a guy who does all that. Certainly he surprised me with everything that he showed. Manny, your take on Delano Banton, and give me a call. Does he make the 15-man roster?
So I think that he's gonna split time with the 905 and the main roster, just because I think that he still has a lot of his game that needs to be filled out. You know, I think for the 46th pick in the draft, he hasn't by any means, you know, dropped any jaws or anything like that, but I think that he's a lot better than what people expected, at least, you know, what the Toronto media expected, I would say. Being that he's from Toronto, which, by the way, congrats on being the first Canadian pick by the Raptors.
Was that surprising, by the way? Were you shocked at that?
That was surprising.
First Canadian who we have picked?
That was very surprising to me. I'm not going to lie. I never thought – I knew that before Jamal McGlure was on the team. I don't think there had been a Canadian on the team before Jamal McGlure in, like, 2011 or
first draft pick. He was the first draft pick.
Yeah. First draft pick by the Raptors, though, that definitely surprised me. Yeah.
It's funny. I'm watching this Banton highlight selection, and there was one play where he completed a dribble handoff after dribbling a lot, and that was the end of the highlight, which is cool. But the handle that I'm seeing in my unqualified opinion for a guy this 6'9", 6'10", I mean, that is impressive. And he's a perfect development prospect with the 905. I covered the Hamilton Honey Badgers of the CEBL. Their head coach, Ryan Schmidt, is the assistant for the Raptors 905. And this is the type of project that he would absolutely love to take on based on my limited viewing of Banton. So there's so much development potential, and I'm sure Ryan Schmidt sees that right now, and he's got his whole program ready to go once he comes down to the 905.
Okay, let me put it this way. I've already put Banton ahead of Yuta Watanabe. Apologies to our Japanese fans. When I look at the – and again, it's premature. It's based on Summer League and the highlights we're watching. But when I look at the two, similar build, lanky, threes, kind of 3-4-ish, supposed to run the point forward a little bit, this guy just seems to have a better vision because he mostly keeps his head up. And he seems to have played point guard a ball handling role since he started playing basketball, which is evident in the way he plays. So even right now, his 3-point shot notwithstanding, which is pretty poor, and maybe that's the make or break decision between Watanabe and him getting minutes is the 3-point shot. But right now, I don't know why Stanley Johnson's highlights. Okay. Oh, these are comps. Stanley Johnson, Michael MKG. I would say Banton is something right now, in these early stages, I prefer him to Watanabe.
The thing with Watanabe I found is offensively, he knew where to go, where to locate himself, just instinctively, I found, throughout the season. Now, how do you value that versus passing ability and ball handling ability, which Yuta has some of as well, I'm not sure. And how do you value that versus 10 to 15th man? What do you need? I think they're close. But Yuta seemed to know where to be on the court, which I think is valuable in some way.
I would agree with that. I think that the difference, at least that I'm seeing, is Banton is so confident when he's running on the fast break. It's like he is so confident in his pace, and he's so confident in his ability to almost dictate where the game's going to go. And, you know, by no means is he a superstar, but he knows, like Utah, he knows where to be, and he knows – I think taking it a step further, though, he knows what he wants to happen, and his confidence. I think his confidence is there. Confidence is something that I don't see too much of in Utah. I might be wrong, but I mean, just the levels of in confidence, and I think that's the biggest difference. Is Delano is so like good at dictating like where he's going, and it's uncanny, really. It's surprising, but I mean, it's a welcome surprise by all means.
That's a really good point, because I mean, of all the sports that people hear coaches and players talk about, I think confidence comes up the most in basketball. I think it's not even close how much that word is mentioned by coaches in basketball compared to other sports.
Yeah, especially in covering just the minor league teams that with the 905 and Hamilton, that is mentioned all the time, and not just by the coaches, but by the players too, just how they're feeling certain times of the year based on what's going on the court, like especially bench guys that like are on short leashes, just if you're not feeling well and you miss your first two shots, well, it's not going to work out well for you when you're fighting for your professional life. So yeah, confidence is cliched, but it means so much. And that's a really good point about Banton in those highlights again that I saw. Yeah, like he knows where he wants to go, and he's got this handle that is really impressive as well.
He's really toolsy is what Zatsman and I were talking about. Is like he's very toolsy. He's long, he's wiry. Like, I mean, he's another guy that, you know, he could fill out. He could probably put on like, you know, maybe 10, 15 pounds. But I mean, honestly, I don't know if he's going to move as fast if he does that. I think, you know, he's starting to carve out at least the early beginnings and the early signs of he's going to be a fast kind of like aerodynamic is the right word.
He's
going to be like, you know what I mean? Right. He's going to be like a fast, loose guard. And you know, I'm by all means, like, I don't think we'll see him post up much, if ever, but I mean, if he can develop a shot like many of these guys, and I mean, I'm so intrigued by him more than a lot of second round picks, by the way.
And you know, you made the point about confidence. I think Utah also had confidence at one point, and then it got sucked out of him like a hurricane in Minnesota.
That's right. Yeah, but you know what though? But even then, he came back and he made that goal. He's like, you know, I'm still gonna go up and block that.
He was a different guy after that. His demeanor changed. He started walking funny.
It's the line of demarcation, right at that point. It's a long season. Confidence.
Yeah, it is.
I think we got to wrap it up. Thanks for coming on, man. Manny, we can find you at _MannyRao at Twitter. I guess Manny Rao was taken by some other
name. It was.
_ in there.
Yes. Yeah, I had to. I'm so upset by it.
Andrew, you're lucky enough to just have your name as your Twitter. But you used to be Transition D. What happened? I used to like that name.
No, I appreciate that, but I'm trying to grow this professional brand that's just burgeoning right now, as you know. So I went with the full name.
Okay. All right. Okay, guys. We'll do it again soon enough. Listener, thank you for tuning in. Quick promo note. The Rapids Republic Tournament is back. We're playing basketball November 28th, Mattamy Athletic Center, 16 teams. We will open registrations on September the 3rd. So look out for that. It's going to get sold out pretty quickly. So get your keyboards ready. And we'll see you guys soon enough. Take care.